Okay. Hello, everybody. So I'm going to talk about the same subject and saying almost the same thing. So we are. It was a work that was done in France, so in Grenoble and in Saclay with Sylvain Petit. Stone scattering measurements were made at the IRL, and the crystal growth was made at the Warwick University. So the difference is that I will describe the things in a bit different way, although the physics remains the same, by introducing this idea of magnetic fragmentation, which was proposed classically, and which was quite an interesting result. And then I will focus in our results so on the neodymium zirconian, with the main properties, our observations, the discussion of the pseudo-spin 1 alpha Hamiltonian that have just been discussed. So you will find the same equation. So if you slept a little, you will have time to see them again, and some field-induced properties. So the idea of magnetic fragmentation was in classical spin ice. So was the idea that in this spin ice where you have your emergent field, if you are in the dumbbell model, you can describe this with an absence of charge at the center of the tetrahedron. And of course, when you flip a spin, you get in with your magnetic charge here, and that can be described by a magnetic monopole, and it will give you here, you just make the sum, of the S, which is plus of minus 2. And then if you, flip again a spin, you will end if this with this anti-ferromagnetic all-in, all-out system, where you have maximized the charge in the tetrahedron, so you will have something which is plus or minus 4. What the idea which was developed by Brooks Bartlett et al. Is that when you consider an emergent field which has a divergent full part, you can always decompose it into two parts, a divergent full part and a divergent free part. And in this description, all the charge will be in this fragment, and all this charge will be and the diversion free part will be there and can keep fluctuating while this one can crystallize. What is interesting is that both can behave in a sense independently. So in spin ices, where the field is nothing but the magnetization, it's then the magnetic moment that will be able to fragment into two parts, one which keeps fluctuating and one which we can crystallize. So if you want to see that, you just look at you take a monopole crystal on a spin ice, so all your tetrahedra are carrying a charge, and if you label your configuration here, so it's a plus 3 in, 1 out, and you just, no, it's the opposite. Okay. And you label your spin, you take plus 1, plus 1, plus 1, minus 1, and you can then decompose it and take all the charge, which is S plus minus 2, on all the spins. And it will give you an all-in, all-out system, where you have exactly the charge which is carried by the whole moment. Then, if you want, you have to obtain your true magnetic moment, so you have to complete this picture with the diversion-free part, and so to have the good moment, you have then to take 1/2, 1/2, 1/2, minus 3/2 here, and you obtain a divergence-free part here, which has a degeneracy, and so which can fluctuate. What's interesting here is that so you can describe this with a crystal of charge plus a Coulomb phase, and so you will end with magnetic Bragg peaks, which are characteristic of this ordering, and a Coulomb phase with the conventional spin ice pattern in diffuse scattering. So in classical dipolar spin ice, this state is predicted provided that you have a certain ratio between the Coulombic interaction and the exchange interactions. So now if we turn to the neodymium zirconate, so as it's a brief summary, as was shown before. So we have a ground doublet, which is a dipolar octopolar doublet with an Ising anisotropy along the 1-1-1 axis, as can be seen here from the magnetization along the three directions. We have a positive Curie-Weiss temperature. We have an anomaly in the AC susceptibility, which is associated with an antiferromagnetic transition towards an all-in, all-out state. But as can be seen, not very well due to the contrast, but in the polarized neutron scattering, we can see that we have these spin ice-like correlations. And so at first sight, you really have what is expected in fragmentations, this is to say an all-in, all-out state with a divergence-full part and a Coulomb phase, which has a divergence-free part. What is interesting is, as a function of temperature, and it will maybe answer one question before, is that when you make different temperature, you can see that, in fact, this spin ice pattern persists well above the Néel temperature. So here it's at 700 mK, you still have some spin ice-like correlations. But as was stated above, these spin ice correlations are not elastic at all, as it was expected in the classical fragmentation, and it is shifted at finite energy. And inelastic neutron scattering could really well resolve this spin ice pattern. And in addition, you have a dispersion which appeared above this flat model. So in fact, it can be described by using introducing multipolar transverse terms and using the Hamiltonians that was described before. So the idea is to take the constraint of the pyrochlore lattice and add it the constraint of the dipolar octopolar doublet, and then it will change the usual spin ice Hamiltonian to this Hamiltonian, which has the property that it does not depend on the bond that you are looking at. So the X and Z components are dipolar components, while the Y is an octopolar component. And you can rotate it and just end with these three parameters. So at the beginning, when we started with our crystalline Hamiltonian and tried to move it to a pseudo-spin Hamiltonian to try to feed the spin wave, we were thinking that we may have small values of Jx and Jxz. And for this reason, and it gives less parameters to feed, we assume Jx and Jxc equal to zero. So we fitted our data just with this Hamiltonian. And indeed, it works pretty well. So all the dispersion curves are nicely reproduced. And we obtain a Gz which is 1.2k and a Gy which is minus 0.55k. But the problem with these parameters is that, in fact, they do not give you the good ground state. So we do not end with the all-in, all-out ground state that we wanted to have from our diffraction measurements, because they give you an octopolar phase. So it does not capture at all our data, the whole set of data, that is to say the all-in, all-out and the divergence-free component. So then what was noticed by Belton is that, in fact, the dispersion we have measured can be described by other set of parameters. And what he did is just he took our parameters and changed them from axis. And he put the Gz at minus 0.55 and Jx at 1.2, and putting the Jy to zero. And in this condition, he found that he had both the correct dynamic features, so the flat mode and the dispersion, and also that it gives the correct ground state, so the all-in all-out ordering. And he said, in a sense, that even if now you are dealing with pseudopin degrees of freedom, you can also describe this, in a sense, with a quantum fragmentation field by considering each pseudospin component. So, of course, now what interested us is not this frame, but the, I would say, real frame, if we want to apply a field or something like that. So these parameters, in fact, correspond to, in the usual frame that we have in pyrochlore, to this these components. So the main difference with our parameters is that you have a strong JXZ, and so we have also a finite JX and a JY equals zero, where in our case we have chosen to put JY quite strong and the other small. So then, because there are many set of parameters that can, in fact, describe this dispersion, we were wondering how these parameters could be consistent with field-induced behavior. So as was also mentioned, if you make MVSH measurements, we'll have a sort of transition at low field here, and you can describe a phase diagram. And it seems that your all-in-all out ordering is really suppressed quite fast when you apply the field. But at the same time, your spin-ice-like correlation at finite energy are still present above this field. These data are upon 15, so it's here. In addition, we have some hysteretic behavior, which is also similar to the, in fact, to the neodymium iridium compound. And where we see here the transition, but there are strange features, so you can, in fact, wonder, does this magnetization curve do really reflect the magnetic structure, or are there some more complicated things? So the idea was to perform diffraction measurements as a function of field to check the magnetic structure. And in fact, when you look at, so this was sweeping a magnetic Bragg peak starting from a saturation at negative field here, you sweep the field and you come back, and you see that indeed you have a step here which corresponds to this, this peak, and also that you reproduce the hysteretic feature. So this change of magnetic structure, the idea was to know whether with the quantum fragmentation Hamiltonian we could describe these features. So to do that, we have refined our magnetic structures as a function of field. So we perform collects at finite things, which are the points here, and refine the whole magnetic structure, and then we rescaled our continuous measurements as a function of field to get the continuous curve here. So for the 111 direction, there are two different moments with respect to the field, one which is along the field, and the other one which are in the Kagome plane. So if you take the convention that the moment is negative when it's pointing in, and it's positive, it's pointing out, you can see that when you sweep the field, this moment, its amplitude will decrease quite fast, and then you will have, and then well, there is small discontinuity here, but then it increases and goes and fastly saturates in the applied magnetic field. The moments which are within the Kagome planes, they show here an abrupt transition at small field. So if you look now what happens along the 110 curve field, sorry. So now we have these two moments which are perpendicular to the field here and which behave in the same way. And here we have two other types of moments. So I just consider the green one and the red one to put not too many curves here. But the idea here is that when you are high field, because these two spins in a sense do not know where to go, so the refined moment is in average is zero. And then when you increase, when we come back to zero field, you recover your all-in-all-out structure, and at the same time, this moment first lose its order moment, and then smoothly goes in the other direction to saturate in a higher field. And then, when you look along the 001 direction, where here you have again two types of moment, you see that the moment, the ordered moment, its amplitude smoothly decreases and then saturates on the other side. So the idea now is, are we able to describe this data with the parameters which were refined by Benton? And in fact, at the moment, so it's preliminary work, so I will not answer that too much, but at the moment we are not able to reproduce the low-field metamagnetic transition with these parameters. And we think that it may be because the JXZ is too strong. So to have, in a sense, a picture, although if, as it was discussed previously, you can only see the octupolar component as all you can describe all as a projection of this octupolar and dipolar component, but it's quite interesting to see that in fact you can describe this picture with two independent fragments. That is to say, one fragment which is subjected to an antiferromagnetic interaction, which granted is all in all out, and one which is an octopolar fragment and in which will respond as a function of field by tilting in the direction of the field. Mm-hmm. And so it's what we have done here. So we took our initial parameters, because we need this to be in the octopolar direction. And then we fit the antiferromagnetic all-in-all-out fragment. And it's quite funny to see that we are able to reproduce quite well with these two fragments the magnetic structure we have observed. So to conclude, so we have an ionizing system with effective ferromagnetic interactions, but which shows a coexistence of all-in-all-out ordering with a reduced moment and a Coulomb phase which is shifted to finite energy. So it can be viewed as the experimental realization of a quantum magnetic fragmentation, which is in fact a consequence of the specific dipolar octopolar nature of the doublet. So we were able to describe what we observe with two independent fragments, with two separate Hamiltonians, when as a function of field. But we of course want to try to refine the Hamiltonian parameters to get a unified description of the field induced behavior. Thank you for your attention.
Polarize the system by applying a strong enough field and doing the same trick that was done in ytterbium titanate and erbium titanate, and then measure the spin waves of the system?
No, it does not work.
So you can't polarize it?
What is the order of transition to all in all of these things?
It's a second order.
What's the university? Is it Ising?
Yeah.
Is there any measurement on the critical response?
No, I don't think so.
You can see, did you show them those data? Maybe
no,
Bela did?
Bela.
You can see that the intensities...
The moment increases quite... but then to really refine the exponent is quite, at least with neutron, it's quite hard because you have very long time of thermalization of the sample. And you have to be quite careful to be sure that your temperature is the true temperature. So if for making careful measurements in temperature, I think it's a bit tricky.
I was confused by the discussion of the fragmentation. So you mentioned something that was not all in all out to have fragmentation, right?
To have fragmentation, you need, in the classical picture, you need to start from a monopole crystal. So you have to three in, one out. I went a bit fast. You have to have three in, one out, and three out, one in. You have
here you had all in, all out.
Yes, but the order moment is not totally ordered. So what is predicted classically in the fragmentation, you have your monopole crystal, and in fact with the artificial thing I wrote, when you decompose your magnetic moment, you will end with a divergence full, where in fact you have half of the magnetic moment which is in this divergence full term. And then you have all the rest of the moment which is in the divergence free term. So then what you expect is that your magnetic Bragg peaks will, so the order moment of the all-in-all-out phase will be half of the total magnetic moment, and so you will have reduced magnetic black peaks. So at the beginning, the idea why we think about this magnetic fragmentation is especially that the order moment in the all-in all-out phase is not the total moment.
So the kind of flat band at finite energy is where you have these pinch points,
yeah.
And you show that the pinch points are still there in a magnetic field.
Yeah.
What happens to this flat band? Is it shifted? Is it broadened? Or is it when you put a magnetic field, what does it evolve?
It shifts and it disappears and it broadens. So what's that? You see the intensity decreases because this octopolar fragment, which is inelastic, when you apply magnetic field, you have part of this moment which can come back in the dipolar channel, so the intensity decreases.
Perhaps you said it, but maybe let me ask again. So what's the problem with the picture from Benton?
At the moment, no problem, except I think there is no problem with the picture, but I think the refined parameters that he proposed at the moment, they are not able to describe the fact that the magnetic transition is at low field here. So we have tried. Maybe it's preliminary, so I will not, maybe we make some mistakes or something, so I will not. But at the moment where we are, we have tried to reproduce these curves with his Hamiltonian, and we could not succeed in doing it.
Is that higher field?
Yes.
So, Nick, I just was wondering how you were calculating this. So how are you trying to reproduce this curve?
So it's just by Mifflin calculation. But what we are doing is that we what is a bit tricky is that it is theoretic, so you cannot start from scratch in a sense. So you have to start from the initial configurations that you have in the saturated field and just move little by little and see how your system evolves in this state.
So how did, I don't know if Nick can comment, but how did the Owen get these significant different parameters than Sylvain and Elsa?
Well, I think you're trying to fit a flat band, so it's kind of unconstrained, yeah. Right? So you have a relatively free choice of parameters from that point of view.
The chi-square,
the physics was and went with.
Yeah, I think the idea was that we cannot predict the correct ground state, so with our parameters we have an octopolar ground state. So I think, I suppose that his idea was to say we must be able with this kind of Hamiltonian to describe this all-in-all-out ground state, and then he thought that of course if you have Gz and Jx, you can stabilize an all-in-all-out. And then, in fact, the value we took are the same, just change the channel where they are, and it allows you to stabilize the good one state.
Bruce? Well, I was still stuck on my first question, but so the fact that you only have GZZ is from the crystal field result.
Yeah.
And so did you, because spin orbit coupling is relatively weak for the light rare earths, right? So the next lowest multiplet is not so far away in energy, right? I mean, you had levels that went up to 100 and something MeV, yeah. But there could be, the next highest multiplet might be at 200 MeV or something. And I was just wondering if you considered that, and if that type of mixing would give you a G perpendicular that was non-zero.
No, because Bella Lake has done it, and
it's still the same, yeah. MJ values.
It does not happen.
And did you, so you were an art, so could you see the next multiple?
Yes.
Or you couldn't?
Right. Yes.
So you still, in fact, you still end with your 9.5 and 3.5 components, even if they come from the I nine of alpha, yeah. or 11 alpha, and so it does not change structure of the doublet.
Okay, so if there's no further question, let's thank the speaker again.